There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all argument, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Good morning. My name is Hugh Douglas. I'm an alcoholic. I like to start off these little sermons with that quotation out of the big book, out of a spiritual experience, for a couple of reasons. I have become convinced over these years that it is that contempt prior to investigation that causes us to give out a damn sight more 30-day chips in Alcoholics Anonymous than we do one-year birthday cakes. And I have also heard a lot of people tell me that they have trouble living by principles. I don't think living by principles is the problem. I think it's the principles we've lived by that's the problem. What is so difficult about living by principles? What's so hard about honesty, open-minded, willingness? What's so difficult? What's so hard about duty, responsibility, and obligation? What is so hideous about kindness, courtesy, and consideration? Why are these so objectionable to so many? I don't know. I have no idea. Perhaps you can enlighten me. I want to take a moment or two to say some things before I start talking this morning. One of the things I would like to do, of course, is to thank the committee for inviting Bev and I here. We have had one hell of an enjoyable weekend. The South may not be the South anymore, but you have not forgotten what hospitality is, and I have never, ever been treated so well by so many. You have been extremely kind. And I will appreciate that as we go away today. I don't like being the last speaker necessarily. It has certain advantages, but it means that it's going to end. But like the phoenix bird, it will rise again out of its own ashes to fly next year. And about this time next year, I'll be remembering you. And it really isn't important whether you remember me. I'll remember you. I feel somewhat like Elizabeth Taylor's eighth husband. I know exactly what's expected of me. I am just not sure that I can live up to past performances. I would also like to take a moment to say something to you new people who are in here. Those of you who last night identified yourself and those you didn't. And tell you, if no one has, that you're a part of a fellowship that has astounded science for a great many years. This is the largest group of people anywhere in the world who have found a way to go from adolescence to senility without ever bothering to pass through maturity. So welcome. And if you're having a little trouble getting rid of the alcohol and quitting drinking, remember one thing, that quitting drinking is like making love to a gorilla. And you are not through until a gorilla is through. And if you feel that your life has served no useful purpose, perhaps you're mistaken about that. It's just that you don't understand the use that God has used you for so long. And it reminds me of a story I heard once, and I think explains it extremely well. It's about a very well-known evangelist who died and went to heaven, and he was sitting in the outer office of St. Peter waiting for his interview. And while he was waiting, a well-known Catholic priest come in, and the girl behind the desk said, "Go right in, Father, he's waiting for you." And the evangelist could understand this because this priest was well-known and well-loved. And a few moments later, a well-known rabbi come in, and the girl behind the desk says, "Go right in, he's waiting for you." And he could understand also why this rabbi got in front of him. He was well-known and well-loved. And a few moments later, a little old lady come in, and a girl behind the desk jumped up, ran over, threw her arms around her, and hugged her, and she said, "Mary, Mary, we're so glad you're here. He's been waiting for you. Go right in." This bothered the evangelist. He went over to the girl, and he said, "I can understand why the priest got in front of me. He was well-known and well-loved, and so was the rabbi. I can understand that. But," he said, "would you mind explaining to me why that little old lady got in front of me?" She said, "Well, it's really very simple. She said when that little old lady was only 17 years old, her father gave her a brand new red convertible for her birthday. And in the 2 years that she drove that car on the streets of Los Angeles, she put the fear of God in the hearts of more people than you did in 40 years of preaching hellfire and brimstone. So perhaps you just don't recognize what your life has been, but every life serves a purpose, even though we may not understand fully what that purpose is. You may wonder why there are so many Californians on the agenda for this weekend, and there's a very simple answer to that. You have a giant metropolitan area around here somewhere that I haven't yet been able to find. It's called Olive Branch, Mississippi. There is a kindly old southern gentleman who comes out our way to give us the Word of God. And I would like to tell each and every one of you that he claims that Memphis is a suburb of that city, and I have not yet been able to find it or him. You keep sending to us, and we'll keep sending us to you. We do not get resentments in California. We get even. I'm sorry that Franklin's out of town this weekend. I was looking forward to seeing him, but I understand he's going to be back out our way before long, and we will see him. And Bev and I had the pleasure one year of being his host at the Valley Convention, and it was very enjoyable. And he is very typical of most of you, and I hope you don't take that as an insult. I don't really mean it that way. I love him very much. Now, what I talk about is not what happened to me when I was drinking. And I got three good reasons for not talking about what it was like when I was drinking. I don't like the LAPD version of the way I drank. I am not overly fond of my first wife's version of the way I drank. And I don't remember how I drank. And if you drank like me, you don't remember how you drank either. And I'm extremely fascinated by people who can get up podiums like this and talk to people like you and go blow-by-blow description of how they drank. And if I'd have known that it was going to be a mark of distinction in my declining years, I probably would have kept notes. I hired a secretary or something, but I didn't, so I don't remember what it was like. And I'm extremely fascinated with the record-keeping that you people have, and you can recite to the exact moment when you walk into this way of life. I find that fascinating. I don't remember when I got here. Sometime around 28th of June, 1960. I ended up in the North Hollywood clubhouse of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got there, I thought it was a home for out-of-work actors. And I have since found out I was right. It is a home for out-of-work actors. And they were using a lot of words and expressions and things that I did not like. Now, some of the things I didn't mind. I heard them say one day to turn your will and your wife over to the care of God, and that sounded okay to me. Another guy said a little while later, he said, we sought through prayer and medication, and that sounded okay. But you were using words like exactly, precisely, absolutely, that leaves no room at all for the imagination of an alcoholic to wander around in. I didn't like that. I had a bunch of bad experiences when I got there. Didn't like none of you. Some of you didn't even like me. I couldn't understand, but I sure as hell didn't like you. And you were using things that I didn't like. I've heard a lot of people say it, and so have you. They don't get emotionally involved in your first year. Bullshit. I think you should go out and get emotionally involved as soon as you can find someone sick enough to have something to do with you. And I say this for a very important reason, because I am convinced that it will prove to you beyond the shadow of a doubt, if you're depending on your emotional condition for your sobriety, you're going to be in for a hell of a lot of drinking. And I don't believe you should blow any time on this program if you can help it, so get involved right away. And I heard a lot of people saying around the North Hollywood clubhouse, especially a woman and a man, and went around preaching all the time, they said, men with the men, women with the women. I'm going to tell you something. When you're in either Hollywood or North Hollywood, California, you hear people saying men with men, women with women, you're not exactly sure what the hell they mean by that. And I thought I'd got myself into a bunch of them this time, haven't I? Along about that time, I got myself what you people today laughingly call a sponsor. Back then we called them adversaries. And I picked one of them. I don't know if I picked him or he picked me, but whatever it was, we never did quite get even with one another, although he always had the slight advantage for some reason or other. Might have been because he was sober 12 years when I got here. I don't really know. But he was cruel, unkind, and unthinking. And he had absolutely no mercy on my tender sensitivity. He treated me like dirt. I learned to like him. And I learned to love him. Then I wasted a hell of a lot of years trying to get even with him. Never made it. And it started with this thing right here, this thing that I'm going to talk about this morning, this book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the title of this book, incidentally, Alcoholics Anonymous. Very simple title. Very simple meaning. It's extremely important. AA stands for Alcoholics Anonymous. It does not stand for altered attitudes, associated assholes, or anything else. It stands for Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep it simple. Really simple. And I want to tell you that I got here clean and sober this morning, which means I took a shower before I left the apartment. I did have a drink on the way over here. Just that simple. Alcoholism has been so bastardized here lately that I can't quite understand exactly what an alcoholic is. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a drunk. Just that simple. And I found a way to live without having to take that drink on a daily basis. Just for today. And I try to keep it that simple so that I can understand it, and maybe you can. And I have heard people talk and complicate this program so much that it is almost impossible to understand where they got their ideas. It is obvious they did not come from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And fundamentally, that's what I'm going to talk to you about this morning, is what I've learned from this book and this way of life, and how I've been able to apply it and live sober when medical science said it's impossible. Can't be done. And if you wonder how you do this by talking it to death. There is no other way that you can do it. You just talk it to death. You cannot think your way through Alcoholics Anonymous. You ask your way through Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's extremely important to understand that. And in understanding this book, I had a bad experience with it. A lot of groups, I don't know whether they do it here or not, but a lot of groups out in California make you an offer about this book. And they say, if you don't have the funds, if you'll see the secretary or someone else when the meeting's over, they'll see you leave with this book on your terms. I would advise you to take them up on that if a group makes you that offer. I don't care if you got $1,000 in your pocket, because I'm convinced it will be the last damn thing you're ever going to get in Alcoholics Anonymous on your term. So get that one to start with. That wasn't made to me, incidentally. This adversary of mine said, I've heard a little of your story and I think you're a thief. And we have a book around here for sale. I want you to buy the book and show me the receipt. And if I see you with the book without a receipt, I'm going to call and have you arrested. I thought he would, so I bought the book, showed him the receipt, started to read the book. And I read this book exactly the way you'd read a law book, looking for the loopholes. There's a hell of a lot of loopholes in this book, too. Except one to do so would injure them or others is a wonderful loophole. We are not saints. That's a beautiful loophole, isn't it? However, I'd advise you to be very careful, because when you jump through those loopholes, they'll have a bad habit of closing up just before your neck clears and you're going to be left hanging out to dry. Now, this book is probably one of the most archaic, poorly written pieces of literature that has ever been foistered on the American public, and especially recovering alcohol. It is hard to read, it is difficult to understand, and no matter how many times you read it and think you understand what's in it, and repeat what you have read, that ain't the way it was written. That goes on for years after years after years. It still goes on. Now, I made the mistake one day of asking this adversary of mine if he'd done explaining to me what was in this book, and he said, no, of course not. I'll be glad to, young man. Now, I'll tell you something about this guy. He never in his life done anything without some kind of a string or a hook being attached to it. And he said, if you'll tell me what's on the first page of that book, I'll be glad to tell you what's on all the rest of the paper. And it seemed like a simple enough task for a man of my ability, so I memorized what I thought was the first page in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought it was a page that we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book, and I repeat it word for word, quote for quote, just like it was written. He looked at me and he said, that's not it. I said, it is. He said, it is not. Went home and read it and walked. I went back and told him so, and he said, my young friend, that is not the first page in this book. I memorized every page from there forward. Table of contents, some of them gave me a hell of a start, but I got to memorize. Each time I go up and tell him what I've memorized, see, that's not it. Finally, after about 3 months, I was in the mood to kill him if he didn't tell me what it was. I said, I found that page. He said, what is it? I said, it's alcoholics anonymous. He said, what's the matter with you? You're crazy? I said, no, sir, I'm not. You told me if I told you what was on the first page of this book, you'd tell me what was on all the rest of the pages. He said, that I would, my young friend, but you have not. And with that, he picked up a book just like this one, held it up so I could see it. And he said, this is the first page in this book, and there is absolutely nothing on the first page. And if it's taken you 3 months to learn about a page with nothing on it, how long do you think it's going to take to learn about a page with the printing on it? One more time he made a fool out of me, but then he said something I think is extremely important. He said, that's the last time the white should ever bother you. From now on, just read the block. It'll make more sense. Now I'll tell you what I found. The first page in this book is blank, and it's blank for a very good reason. It's indicative of the open mind that an alcoholic must have to understand this way of life, because you will understand now something that is not understandable by anyone except a drunk. Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholics are just backwards to any way of life or any other living creature on this planet. It is not that we're right or wrong any more than anyone else. It's just that every damn thing we do backwards. I had a friend once who bought four brand new tires, got a hell of a price on them. He didn't own a car. And if you ever go to a meeting where they light candles on a cake, and there's a lot of candles on that cake, watch what happens. Whoever's lighting those candles will light the outside first, and they burn the hell out of their hand trying to light the inside last. So we do everything backwards. And Alcoholics Anonymous is backwards to any other way of life or philosophy you've ever heard. Where else, in what other group, can people get up and give an hour's talk without a prepared speech? The president of this country can't do that. We can do that. Because we're backwards. And the normal human being thinks, reacts, and feels. The alcoholic does not do that. He feels, reacts, and then he thinks. And a normal person thinks, reacts, and feels. And if you happen to have, and you ladies, please excuse me for a moment, but fellas, imagine, if you will, for a moment, somebody going up in a small town to a one-girl cat house, and this girl has one of these other social diseases we talk about. The normal person going there may get the disease, but he will not go back. But the alcoholic will. He goes back thinking, this time it's going to be different. And besides that, he fell in love on the first visit. So he has a little bit of a difficult problem. And in backwards, I was in the Marine Corps for a while, and surrender to win was not one of their philosophies. And for 10 years, I was in business in L.A., and keep it by giving it away is not a business axiom. You put it in your hip pocket, put your hand in your pocket, and get the hell out of town, but you don't give nobody nothing. So you'll have a little difficulty until you understand that the whole concept of Alcoholics Anonymous is just backwards from any other concept anywhere, no matter what that concept is. And probably the best description of alcoholism I have ever read is in this book, in The Doctor's Opinion. And I've read many books, articles, and treatises on alcoholism, written by some very learned, well-meaning people. And each one of them have been an attempt to explain, understand, or elaborate on what Silkworth put in his book some 52 years ago, 48 years ago, really. You know what Silkworth said about us? He said, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And while we can admit this effect is injurious, it is so elusive that we soon cannot differentiate between the true and the false, and we become convinced that our alcoholic life is the only normal. Let me tell you a remarkable thing about that. If you are convinced that your way of life is the only normal way of life, no matter what goes wrong, it's never your fault. Her fault. It's his fault. It's their fault. But it's not yours. After all, you're living the way life should normally be lived, and they are out of step. And then he said that we're restless, irritable, and discontented, unless we can once again experience the ease and comfort that comes by taking a few drinks. Drinks we see others taking with impunity, but once we succumb to the desire again, as so many do, the phenomena of craving develops. And we will pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, vowing never to drink again, and that this will happen over and over and over. And unless we can experience some kind of a complete psychic change, there is very little hope for our recovery. Very little hope. Now, the next paragraph in a doctor's opinion gives you some hope. But because I had to buy this book and read it, you can buy your own damn book and read it if you want to know what it says. I'm not going to say. But let me point out one thing that sometimes people get confused about. Do you know the only known cause of alcoholism is alcohol? It's the only thing that causes alcoholism. Nothing else causes alcoholism. Alcohol causes alcoholism. Wine, gin, beer, sour mash, whiskey, this causes alcoholism. Nothing else. Women don't cause alcoholism. You ever drink a woman? No, of course not. You can't drink a woman, so they don't cause alcoholism. Alcohol causes alcoholism, and the only known treatment for alcoholism is abstinence. There's no other known treatment. It's only one to work. You just stay away from the first drink. If it was that simple, then why write a book? You know what alcoholism is? Simply says, when I have a drink, I want another. And over a period of time, I will need another one. And after a while, I will not be able to quit no matter what. AA or no AA. It will make no difference by this time. I will have been beyond recall. I'm glad that Bill, when he wrote this book, said some of you women do that quickly. Makes me understand Beverly a hell of a lot better. Beyond recall. Of course, she don't think so, and I got to fly home with her, so I'm not going to say that once. Once is enough, I guess. Alcoholism is caused by alcohol. But there's one sentence in this book that you rarely hear anybody use that explains why they wrote the book. It says, laying the drink question aside, we can see where our way of life would have been wholly unsatisfactory. So we was living the wrong way. Even if we had never have drank, our way of life would have been totally unsatisfactory. And that's why we got a book. And that's why we read it. Or why we should. I've talked to several of you too, and I know that most of you own this book, but I'm not too damn sure that most of you have read it. Read it. Understand it. Talk about it. Try to grasp its meaning. I knew that Bill should have the first place in this book. After all, he was the originating co-founder. But I read it several times, and something else began to occur to me. In 1929, Bill was a successful stockbroker in New York who was able to ride a motorcycle all over the East. Hell, I've been here 27, 28 years. I still can't ride one of them damn things. And yet in 1935, he had co-founded Alcoholics Anonymous. He sobered up in 1934. That's only 5 years, no matter how you cut it. Oh, he drank a lot. I won't deny that. So it's not how much you drink. It's not how long you drink. It's what happens to you when you drink that you should take a look at. It's not what led you to drinking, but where in the hell did the drinking lead you? Something we totally ignore too often. Where did it leave you? Where were you when you got here? The balance of this book now is written exclusively and entirely about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think I can prove that to you in a very short period of time. When you read chapters 2 and 3, you'll be reading only about step 1. And when you read chapter 3, you'll find out exactly why your life is unmanageable when it says the great obsession of every abnormal drinker is the idea that somehow, someday, he can control and enjoy his drinking. And you ask a useful member of Al-Anon, and they will tell you that the great obsession that causes any abnormality is the idea that you can control and enjoy anyone or anything. Control them or enjoy them, just don't try to do both. And if you fellows don't believe me, I'll tell you what you do. When this meeting is over today, go home and try to control her. Try to live her life for her. And watch your own happiness begin to dissipate and disappear. The great obsession of every abnormal drinker. Step 1. There was one part of that step that I simply could not buy, did not understand, and didn't want anything to do with. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. I'd admit I was an alcoholic on the wet end of a bar, but I would not admit I was powerless over anything or anyone. When I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had made and spent $963,000. I'd been given one of the biggest medals that can hang around your neck in this country, and there was no way you or anybody else was going to tell me I was powerless over anything or anyone. The fact I was sleeping in a cardboard box at the time was a mere coincidence. It had nothing to do with reality. Powerless. The next chapter in this book is titled We Agnostics. And the first paragraph in that chapter is extremely important. Because it says in the preceding chapters you have learned something of alcoholism, we hope. We have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic, and they're not talking about the alcoholic now and the heavy drinker or the non-drinker. What they're talking about is the alcoholic and the heavy drinker. What's the difference between them? If you read chapter 2, you'll find it. It says a heavy drinker, given sufficient reason, can quit. Problems of money, job problems, wife problems, family problems, health problems, he can quit. I couldn't. These are the things that would have encouraged me to drink. They say, you drink, you're going to die. So give me a drink, it'll make dying easier. Take another drink, you'll go crazier. Give me a drink, it'll make going crazy easier. I couldn't quit. They can. There's a difference. And then it lists the only two symptoms that are listed anywhere in this book for alcoholism, and there are only two, regardless of what anybody else tells you. This book only lists two symptoms for alcoholism. It says, if when you honestly want to, you find that you cannot quit entirely, or if when you are drinking or have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If this be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. If that's true, would you tell me now why so many of my friends, for so long including myself, have wasted so much of our time trying to become emotionally stable and have so little to do with a spiritual way of life? Do you think we can do it ourselves? Oh, I guess all of us do from time to time. We agnostics. Now I want to tell you something. I want to get one thing clarified with you right now. I was born and raised over here in southern Missouri, not too awful far from here, in the Baptist Bible Belt. So I want to make it absolutely clear with each and every one of you that I was neither an atheist nor an agnostic when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I believed in God and Jesus Christ then, and I still do. That has not changed one little bit. And I've been told by a lot of people that talking about Christ or God from podiums like this is going to drive some of you people out of here. It might. It might. But booze is going to drive you back. So in the end, we're going to break even. Now, if you don't like hearing about God, a power greater than yourself, a higher power, then don't bother to read this book, because you'll find it's mentioned some 228 different times. If you don't like hearing about Christ or the devil, and for heaven's sakes, don't read page 11, because both of them are mentioned on that one page. In fact, it might be necessary for you to find another way to stay sober, and when you fail miserably, be pawned back. And we'll talk about this spiritual concept that Alcoholics Anonymous has become so world famous for in the last 50 plus years. Spiritual concept. It's not getting all you want. It's wanting all you got. A very simple chain, but very essential. Very simple. Now, if you're ever in my area of southern Missouri, you'll find out fundamentally there are two kinds of people over there. Baptists and heathens. And if you want to tell the difference, it's very simple. All you have to do is look at them. The heathens will be the ones who are smiling. Now, on page 52 in this one chapter, there are eight results of being either an atheist, an agnostic, or an egoist. I didn't say egotist, even on some people say in my case that too would have applied. What I said, egoist. You know what an egoist is? An egoist is a person that while he knows all about God, he believes only in himself. And if you believe only in yourself, you will think only of yourself. And it isn't long before you'll live your life as if you was in a room full of mirrors and every human emotion goes out, bounces right back. And if you feel any kind of pity, it will always be self-pity, and you'll find out it's very limited. And you will become frustrated as hell trying to make someone else feel as sorry for you as you feel for yourself, because you ain't got enough. Self-pity. Self. 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 I have heard people talk so many times in Alcoholics Anonymous, I want self-esteem, self-respect. I want self-worth. Are they valuable? Are they even necessary? How many times over the years have we seen self-esteem turn into conceit, self-worth turn into arrogance? Self. This book says abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Not to try self-improvement. Most of us could use some self-improvement, but most of us have come to realize we're never going to get it, so we go ahead and be happy anyway. Self. Always self. I said there were eight results on that page, didn't I? Of being either an atheist, agnostic, or an egoist. also said I had to buy this book. I ain't going to tell you what they are. You buy your own damn book again. Read them if you want to. But I think I'll tell you what two of them are. One of them says we couldn't control our emotional natures. One of them says we were having trouble in our personal relationships. Oh, there's a good word. You know where else relationships is mentioned in this book? In chapter 11. Where it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Now tell me, fella, is it possible most of these relationships we got ourselves involved in went to hell so quickly because we went into a what's in it for me? What can I get out of it? And we never existed. We never even had a chance. Is it possible? I think it's something all of us should look at from time to time, because you know that we is probably the beginning of the greatest religious concept that has ever been given to the human race. And our Father is the way it starts. Our Father. Not my Father. Not yours. Not his. Our Father. We say it all the time in these meetings and don't practice it. Too much bigotry, too much bias, too much contempt. Our Father. Remember that. Our Father. The next chapter in this book, title, How It Works. Did you ever ask an old-timer how it works? And he says, trust God and clean house. You know where he got it? Out of chapter 7. Where it says, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he too can get well, regardless of anyone. The only conditions being that he trust in God and clean house. Now, before I get into significance in chapter 5, there's something else I'd like to talk to you about. That's a small portion of chapter 5. They're reading all over the country now. That small portion of chapter 5. You know what happens when you hear something read in all your meetings? You don't pay one damn bit of attention to what's being read. You're too busy trying to make out with the girl next to you. You're thinking what you're going to do when the meeting's over and you can get the hell out of here, but you don't pay no attention to what's being read. And I've heard a lot of people say, you can work this program any way you want to. Maybe you can. You know what the book says? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, and there is no S on path. Only one. One path. It says there are two kinds of people ain't going to make it. Those who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. They're talking about the smart ass and wet brain. Next time one of you have a little drinky poo, or some of you fire off them pocket rockets you've been carrying around with you, and you're sitting out here on a street corner trying to figure out which one you are, I want to tell you right now, wet brain can't think. You don't know which one you are, just told you. Probably the most misquoted statement in all of Alcoholics Anonymous is also in that part we read so often in so many places. Have you ever heard somebody say, if you want what we have, you know that's the philosophy of a thief? And it is not a part of the AA way of life, it's not in this book. You know what it does say? If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Have you made that decision? Do you want it? Are you willing to go to any length to get it? If not, you ain't going to get it. What you will get is a whole bunch of little technicolored buttons they give out to wear on your keychain. You might even get a cake or two with a candle on it, but you know what you won't get? Hope, contentment, peace of mind, serenity. Any of the things that makes life worth living, they'll simply be elusive. They won't be available. They'll be gone. Christ had 12 disciples. Alcoholics Anonymous has 12 steps. At some of these we balked. One of Christ's disciples was Judas. One of these steps is Judas. You know which one it is? Don't make any difference what the number is. It's the one step you really believe you don't have to take. That's a Judas step. It's the one step you're really convinced don't apply to you. Don't take it. Watch what happens. Probably the most misunderstood statement in AA is also in that part we read. There are those, too, who are gravely emotionally and mentally ill, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. You know how many people have been deceived into believing they could treat emotional illness by being honest? And have forgotten that the title of this book is Alcoholics Anonymous. You can be nutty as a fruitcake, If you can admit alcohol's a hell of a problem with you, stop drinking, they'll give you a cake every year. We got a guy out there in California, a Pacific group, now he is a fruitcake. He comes back sober every year, they give him cake, got 29 years. I understand AA is going to advance the old-timer age to 35 just to keep him from getting there. But you don't have to be sane to get a cake in AA, you got to be sober. It must be obvious to you from what you've seen and heard here this weekend. You ain't got to be wrapped too tight to get a cake. No, all you got to do is don't drink. But how many of us really know what honesty is? You know, I thought I knew what honesty was. I knew what dishonesty was because I was in business for 10 years out there on the coast. So I knew what dishonesty was. I didn't know what honesty was. And I made another mistake. I went up to this adversary of mine one day and I said, would you mind explaining to me honesty as it applies to this way of life? He said, no, of course not. He said, I'll be glad to. Now, he told me a little story. And he had a way of getting you to answer his question. So when you answered his question, you knew the answer to yours and he got out of a lot of work. What he said to me was, he said, let's assume that there's a man and a woman who are both married to someone else, and they get together one day and they decide to go to a motel. And they go up to the desk clerk to register, and the clerk looks at them and he says, are you married? And they say, yes, we are. He gives them a key, they go in, and he said, now you tell me honesty would have applied to that. Well, I hadn't been in that position for a while at the time. It didn't sound like such a bad idea to me, but it seemed obvious. And I said, well, yeah, if they were married, they'd have said, yeah, we're married, but not to each other. He said, no, that's not it. He said, that certainly would have been the truth, though, wouldn't it? And it would have eliminated a sin of omission, but it has absolutely nothing to do with honesty. And once again, I went on a thinking tour. And for 3 more months, I tried to figure this damn thing out. And 3 months later, I was no closer to the solution than I was the day he told it to me. And I went up to him in another mood, going to kill him if he didn't give me the answer to this one. And I said, what about this little story you told me about the man and the woman who went to the motel and the honesty bit? I said, how does it apply? He said, you mean to tell me you haven't figured that out yet? I said, no, I ain't. He said, young man, you amaze me. He said, if they'd have been honest, they would not have been there. That had never occurred to me. But something did occur to me. Honesty deals with integrity. Truth deals with facts. And people can tell you the truth and not be honest. And how many times have we been deluded into believing that truth was honesty? Somebody told us the truth, they weren't honest. And if somebody tells you they're a thief and you invite them home with you and they steal all you got, for God's sakes, don't go to a meeting complaining about them. They didn't say they were honest. And thieves steal. Truth is extremely important. Honesty is extremely critical. And I learned about action. Honesty is an action. An action in Alcoholics Anonymous is a magic word, isn't it? Action. Not our attitude, but our actions. I've had some damn good attitudes about some damn poor actions in my life. What about changing our action? Do you think that prayer, begging God for something, is going to answer if you do the opposite? It won't, you know. It simply won't work. God does not speak every language on earth. He doesn't need to. He watches what you do. He watches your actions. Did you know Christ was extremely familiar with this? Because in John, he said something that's very important. Something we in AA picked up many years ago and forgot to give the credit where it was due. Have you heard people say, walk like you talk? You know what Christ said? If I do not my Father's work, believe not what I say. And I would apply that to me. If my actions do not match my words, pay no attention to my words. They will delude and deceive. And they are meant to. My actions won't. And perhaps that's why we say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Not bad ones, but good ones. And we had noble thoughts, noble drives, noble ambitions. Every one of us at one time or another had these things and couldn't live up to them because we were trying to live on an individual basis. And we were successful in doing one thing. We were successful in separating ourselves from the spirit of our fellow man and the spirit of God, and we knew loneliness as no one else has ever known it, because we were successful in separating ourselves from the spirit of God and the spirit of man. And Alcoholics Anonymous has showed how to mend this and how to be a part of instead of apart from. right after the ABCs where we stop reading, something remarkable happens in this book. It says, being convinced we were at step three, and step three is italicized. A little further over in that same chapter, it says this is step four, and step four is also italicized. All of the steps are italicized now in order in their appearance in this book, and there are two steps in chapter five how it works, three and four. Trust God, clean house. Trust God, clean house. What about step two? Did you ever really try to understand that step two before we go too far away from it? We came to believe that. I thought it said we came to believe in. It doesn't say that. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know what though most people in AA have big trouble with today? We have made counselors, psychiatrists, philosophers, psychologists wealthy because we want to be restored to sanity. But we didn't want to come to believe. A sponsor is somewhat different than a counselor. Or a counselor will help you. They take a long time in helping you because there's a certain amount of monetary flow, their direction. A sponsor does not take so much time because he's not getting paid for it and he gets sick and tired of hearing your bullshit. So if you're thinking, man, get yourself a sponsor and forget these counselors and all these other people and they're making enough money off other people. They don't need ours. Now, you'll find there are two kinds of people in Alcoholics Anonymous when it comes to this inventory. Those you cannot make take an inventory and those you cannot keep from taking an inventory. I come from the first kind. I'd ask a guy once in AA, I said, when do you take the fifth step? He said, when the statute of limitations run out. I figured that was pretty good advice. You don't take a fourth, you don't take a fifth, right? So I went along for a good long time not taking a fourth step. One day this adversary of mine caught me and he said, kid, you've been freeloading off us long enough time you took an inventory. What the hell? I took an inventory. Wrote it all out in longhand. Seen the syntax was right. Punctuated it properly. Edited it somewhat for readability. Put a little addendum with this resentment list they got in this chapter. Put a loose-leaf notebook, handed it to him. He said, what's this movie script? I said, no, sir, that's my inventory. He thumbed through it. He said, it is not your inventory. He said, I'm an actor. I know a script when I see one. This one won't play. And he handed it back to me. I said, that is not a movie script. That is my inventory. He said, it is not your inventory. He said, what you have done, my young friend, is itemized your behavioral patterns. And I have no doubt you've edited it so damn well that neither you nor I will ever know how you were ever wrong about anything. With that, he reached in his coat pocket, took out a small notebook to our one sheet, said, take your inventory on this. I said, I can't. He says, you can't. I said, I can't. Oh, it's too small. He said, it is not. I said, it is. He said, it is not. My young friend, tell me something. Did you ever knowingly take anything that did not belong to you? I said, of course I have. You know that. He said, write down thief. He said, have you ever told a little story you knew did not match the facts in the case? I said, of course I have. You know that too. He said, write down liar. I don't know about you, but I didn't like the way this damn inventory was starting to turn out. He said, you ever played around with a girl when you was married to somebody else? I said, of course I have. You know that too. He said, then ride down cheap. I said, I told you I was a Baptist. He said, what's the difference? You know, that one statement opened my eyes to something that I had totally overlooked for many, many years. Do you know that quite often a deep-seated religious conviction is a tremendous obstacle to a spiritual concept? And how many times have you heard people say, if you ain't a good Baptist, you ain't good for nothing. If you're not a good Catholic, what good are you? And once again, one more time, our Father does not exist. Our Father. Alcoholics Anonymous says, God as you understand God. Your understanding of God. Not your creation of God, but your understanding of God. You'll find nothing here that will interfere with it. Absolutely nothing. You can believe or not believe. If you're like me, you will do what step two says and you will come to believe. Even though you may have a deep-seated religious conviction, you may find you have a tremendous obstacle to spiritual concept. It says so in the book, too. It's not like that. I ain't going to tell you where it is. Read your own damn book. Now, By taking an inventory in this manner, I discovered something that bothered me. Being a thief didn't bother me. And that bothered me. And I went up to him one day and I said, you know, being a thief don't bother me. He said, why should it? We in Alcoholics Anonymous are not moralists. It's not up to us to see that everyone in the world fits the patterns of an ever-changing society, for God's sakes. He said, what we're trying to do is find out what our moral obstacles are to a spiritual concept. But he said, you told me once that lying did bother you. I said, it does. He said, are you going to steal without lying? And he hadn't for a little while. But I thought about it, and I found a way. Almost everything that I have told you so far here this morning, I have stolen from something or someone and weaved it together in the form of a story that I hope will help someone else better understand what this way of life is all about. And then I discovered something. Do you know that I'd spent a lot of time trying to get rid of character traits. Character traits are God-given. You cannot get rid of a character trait. You can misuse it, but you cannot get rid of it. God gave it to you. He meant for you to use it. And do you know that the character traits of a pathological liar and a novelist are identically the same thing? Just the way they use them. Great literature, Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights, were written by the Bronte sisters, but you know they wrote under the name of Bell? And some of the greatest of all American literature was written by Mark Twain. The Jumping Frog of Calaveras County, and Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer. But you know his real name was Samuel Clemens? With these people, these were nom de plumes, pen names. With me, aliases. But aren't they remarkably similar? Remarkably similar. You see, when you don't use a character trait selfishly, but for the benefit of others, and I didn't say economically now. If you have a trait that's marketable, for God's sake, use it. I didn't say that. But don't use it selfishly. They did not do these things for selfish reasons. And today, long after they are gone, their books remain for our enjoyment. They have given to those yet unborn and passed their legacy on to those of us who can enjoy it, as we are asked to do also in Alcoholics Anonymous, to pass this legacy on. Pass it on. Always. Pass it on. There is another word in there that will stumble some people. It's called resentment. You know what a resentment is? Fundamentally, a resentment is the courage of a coward. And you get a resentment because someone done, or you think someone done, something that's detrimental to you, and you do absolutely nothing but think about it. The more you think, the worse it gets. And it isn't long before you're filled with a burning rage ready to kill that sumbitch out there enjoying life. Resentments, really, I imagine, have the power to actually kill. Let me tell you something. When I was going to school, I read Shakespeare. Loved it, some of it, anyway. And in Julius Caesar, there is something I hope I never forget. Caesar is explaining something that he intends to do, and a friend says, beware, Caesar, beware. And he said, a coward dies many times before his death. The valiant never taste of death but once. How many times do you want to die? Is once enough? Or do you want to do it over and over? Did you ever read that Serenity Prayer? See, I jumped over step three for a reason, so I can go back to it. You know what that Serenity Prayer says? It says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Let's say one word about it. Approval, does it? You see, as an egoist, if I couldn't approve of it, I couldn't accept it. I'll tell you one thing, there's a hell of a lot of things in AA and out of AA I don't approve of. Especially you people driving little Japanese beer cans on the freeway when I'm in a hurry. But that isn't what that prayer says, is it? You know what the next line says? The courage to change the things we can. The wisdom knows the difference. I think it should say in a sponsor that knows the difference, but it doesn't make any difference. It works either way, doesn't it? When you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and obtain and maintain your sobriety over a period of years, you will become a leader, whether you want to or not. Your years will make you that. It will give you that. Step three will determine who leads you. And how well you have worked that into your life now will show whether you are a shepherd or a Judas goat. Whether you lead people to the slaughter or whether you lead them out of the bewilderment of their own mind will depend on how well you have worked step three into your life. And there's an awful lot of confusion about that step in this way of life. We turned our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood God. You know how many people I've had tell me, I have turned my will and my life over to the care of God now, and He's working for me. Oh, my God. Let me tell you something. I went to seminary for a good long time, long enough to have entered a ministry if I'd have so chosen. And there is a record of God having gotten a job working for 6 days, creating the heavens and the earth, took a day off, and there is no record that He ever went to work again, ever. Anywhere for anyone. When you turn your will and your life over to the care of God, it's like turning your will and your life over to the care of a woman. You go after her. You devote your life to her. You devote your pursuits to her on her behalf. And that's exactly what A.A. is saying. When you turn your will and your life over to the care of God, as you understand God, you will do God's work. He won't do yours. And if you don't believe that works, tomorrow morning when you go to work, you tell the boss, from now on you're working for me, and watch what happens to your job. I'll guarantee you what will happen to your job. You'll be out of a job. But a more remarkable thing does happen. When you start doing God's work, as you believe God would have you do His work, things begin to change. And you find that one day the worst you can do is break even, where before that was the best you could have possibly hoped for. And things begin to happen now that never happened before. And I didn't say calamities don't hit, they do. Tragedy hits all the time. We bury friends. We go out and pick up drunks who we've known for a long time sober. We do a lot of things. Tragedy hits, of course. But we have the power now to do those things. Somehow or another, it's developed within us. That power that we never had before to do these noble things now has been given to us, or revealed to us, or exposed to us, or whatever else you want to say. It is now there anyway. The next time you find out you got bad breaks, don't cuss. It's just God's way of saying, I'm going to save your life. I need you. And don't call things coincidence, because coincidence is only when God chooses to remain anonymous. No other reason. Do God's work. And you'll find that in this book, incidentally. You're going to do God's work now. He's not going to do yours, but He will do for you what you could not have done for yourself. Something happened. The next chapter in this book, entitled Into Action. It is not entitled Into Thinking, unfortunately. But every step, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 are all itemized and italicized in that one chapter. And it is absolute proof, I believe, that we can live ourselves into good thinking where we could never have thought ourselves into good living. Into action. And action is now the magic word for all of us. Into action. They close that chapter by saying, we will now devote the next chapter entirely to the 12-step working with others. And they do, and fundamentally, that seems to have been the basic text to me. I didn't read these other chapters for a long time. At the time in my life I'm talking about, I did not have a wife, and I did not even want a wife. So I never read the chapter to the wife. And I know some of you young fellows out there feel the same way. You don't have a wife and you don't want one. I got news for you. You are probably going to get a wife whether you want one or not, so I'd advise you to read a chapter to the wives. And if I had not have read that chapter, there are four types of alcoholics I might not have known anything about. There are five types in the doctor's opinion and one more type in the basic text, and that is 10 types of alcoholics that were extremely well known when this book was published in 1939, and God only knows how many types of alcoholics there are today. And if that's not enough to get you over your bigotry that says, if you didn't drink like I drank, you're not an alcoholic, I don't know what would be. What about family afterward? Don't have a family, you don't even want one of those either, got news for you, fellas. You're not going to find a 40-year-old virgin orphan in AA, or Alaron either, for that matter. So you'll probably get a family, whether you want one or not. Now, I got 3 daughters. Beverly's got 1. That's 4 daughters. I'll tell you all right now, I'd rather raise saber-toothed tigers than daughter. But we got 4 of them. And we get along remarkably well. We're separated by great distances, and this helps him measure. But we got 4 of them. There's something else I wouldn't have known if I had not have read that chapter. Do you know it's okay to live in a good home, drive a good car, have money in a bank, wear decent clothes? You don't have to be a bum anymore if you don't want to. It says the material is all right as long as it always follows the spiritual, but never precedes it. First things first. What about the employer? I don't know about... Yeah, hell, I know about you. Money has never been an incentive for me to work. Poverty is an incentive for me to work. Money's not. But if I had not have read that chapter, I might not have ever known what the five greatest enemies of the alcoholic are. You know what they are? Resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration. And the fourth most common used word in 18 different languages, fear. Fear. Do you know how Alcoholics Anonymous gets rid of fear? Well, it really doesn't get rid of fear. What it does get rid of the causes of fear. And probably the most common cause of fear in the human race is called embarrassment. And you will not take part in your own recovery because you're so concerned that you're going to embarrass yourself. You will. I'm going to tell you right now, you'll embarrass yourself. I said once in a meeting many years ago, I've done everything there is to do except make love to another man. Another guy in the meeting said, if you've had as many blackouts as you say you had, how do you know you didn't? Oh, you'll embarrass yourself. But you see, by taking part in your own recovery, you get over it. And it no longer causes fear. What about retribution? Retribution. There is a beautiful word, retribution. You know, most of us are so scared to death that somebody's going to do to us what we've already done to somebody else. Retribution. I used to think you people who wouldn't say the Lord's Prayer when a meeting was over with nothing but a bunch of damned atheists. I've come to respect you. You're smarter than I was. There is one part of that Lord's Prayer that most of us never bother with that is tremendously important. It says, Lord, treat me just like I'm going to treat old Joe when I get my damn hands on him. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And there was the key and the secret to something that I had overlooked for years. You know, when I forgive those who have hurt me, I am forgiven. They ain't. If you've got a personality like mine, you'll enjoy the hell out of that. You'll know that you're off the hook, but they're not. When you forgive those who have harmed you, God says you are now forgiven. I don't have the power to forgive anyone anything, not even myself. God does. And when I show my good intentions of forgiving all of those who have harmed me, God says, okay, kid, you're worthy now. I forgive you. And all the angels in heaven rejoice when a sinner repents. Right? Must have had a hell of a ball up there in our case, didn't it? Dear, what about loneliness? Loneliness. Do you know that one thing there? Loneliness has caused most of you women more trouble than any other single thing. You were just lonely. Lonely. Horrible loneliness. I'm sorry that men like me took advantage of people like you when you were at your emotional worst. I'm even more sorry, incidentally, that many still are. Loneliness. How does Alcoholics Anonymous overcome this? Let me tell you how it overcomes it. You remember the title of this book, Alcoholics Anonymous? Do you know that there are almost 200 different anonymous programs in this world today? Almost 200 different ones, all based on the same concepts in this book, all based fundamentally on this book. N.A., G.A., O.A., E.H.A., C.A., so many A's. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is A.A. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. How does Alcoholics Anonymous possibly work? It's the fellowship, the other half of this damn thing. It's two parts. The fellowship is alcoholics here. In N.A., it's narcotics addicts. In G.A., it's gamblers. In O.A., it's overeaters. But here, one drunk can understand another one as no one else can. In other words, you can't lie to another drunk. It's awful hard to lie to a sea captain if you're not a sea captain, believe me. I've tried. AA works because of the fellowship. And when you get involved in this fellowship, when you become a part of a convention like this, when you become part of a group, when you become a part of general service, when you become a part of central office, intergroup, whatever it is, you find the loneliness begins to dissipate. It goes away. And you will take an immediate dislike to some of the people in your group. You won't like them. Now, you'll go back one night, they won't be there, and you'll say, where's Joe? Where's Fred tonight? Have you seen him? And you'll find out now that you're beginning to be concerned of others as much as yourself, and the loneliness disappears. And maybe you'll be as fortunate as I am and get what you deserve, as I did some 17 years ago when Bev and I got married. I have heard a lot of people say AA marriages don't work. AA marriages will work better than any other kind of marriage if you are working the AA program into your life, and if you are not, it will not. If you have gotten over your selfishness, if you have gotten over the great I, the ego, the watachi, and all these other things, your marriage will work. If it is meant to be, it will be. Ours does. Ask her. She's been extremely happy for the last 17 years, she'll tell you. So have I. It works. You see, when you want to get rid of retribution, what you got to now do is go to all of the people you have harmed and say, what can I do to set this right? You have now had that change that's necessary. You're not going back to apologize. You're not going back as a butt boy, a scapegoat. You're not going back to take punishment. You have dignity, honor, and integrity now. You go back and say, what can I do to set this right? I screwed up your life. What can I do to set it right? You're not going back there to be beat on, but to set right or wrong. And now it doesn't make any difference what someone else does. Hell, the best thing to do is just get even. And then you begin to understand that other people's opinion of you is none of your business. And I love each and every one of you. And there isn't one damn thing any one of you can do about it. Not one thing. I always thought you controlled my love for you. I didn't know that you didn't. Oh, you might stay away. You might ignore me. You might shun me. You might even talk about me. But you cannot. You cannot stop me from loving you. It's impossible. And I love each and every one of you as much as I love the woman I've been married to for the last 17 years. And if you think that's a puzzle, I'll explain it. You see, I made commitments to Beverly I have not made to you. And I have learned about loyalty and honesty and integrity. And I keep the commitments I have made, and I do not make conflicting commitments. And this way of life has showed me how not to make those commitments. Something in fidelity now that wasn't there before is there now. But does that affect love? Of course not. It does not affect love in any way, and you know it, and so do I. How in the world can you love your wife and your children at the same... How can it be the same thing? You do things with your wife. I hope to God you're not doing with your children. But how can it be love then? Because love is something different than most people understand. Most of us base love on three things. Possession, desire, or a severe emotional dysfunction. We call it love. Every time we see her, we get all nervous and strained, and we say, this is love. It is simply an emotional dysfunction. It ain't got nothing to do with love. To understand love, you must understand some very simple things to begin with, and I'd like to explain to you what mine is in closing this way, this talk this morning, what love is. If you want to learn to love the most, you must first learn to love the least, and Alcoholics Anonymous gives you that opportunity, and Christ said that, didn't he? He said, when you love these the least of mine, then you love me, but not before. And when you love the least member of this group here this morning, that's when you love the most. Learn to love the most by learning to love the least. And that most love then gives you access to other love. Love. Some years ago at Carville, Louisiana, there was a man who had a lot of money, and he devoted a lot of his money to Carville. And he went down there one day to see what it was like and what these little sisters of charity were doing. And one of them escorted him all through the place, and he seen these nuns binding up these sores and doing it smilingly and wiping away the filth, and the stench was something horrible, and they were all smiling and talking. He couldn't understand this, and when he was leaving that morning, he said, you know, sister, he said, I would not do what you do for $1 million. And she looked up at him and she said, John, neither would I. Neither would I. We do for love what we would not consider doing for money, and that makes it love, doesn't it? Love. The simplest of all human things, and I don't believe that love is an emotion. I want to straighten that one out right now. I believe that love is an action. Love and honesty have that in common. They are both actions. And it is the action you take on behalf of others, those you may never know. When you have no axe to grind, when you have no points to make, when there is nothing seemingly in it for you, and yet you reap the reward. Love. Love is an action. It is not an emotion. And for any action to be important, it has to have some qualities. I'll tell you about four of them that I have found in love. The first quality I found was transparency. To become transparent. To let other people see in so you can see out. And for the first time in my life, those windows had, mirrors had started to become windows. And I used to tell Beth, what you see is what you get. If you don't like it, then we can remain friends and not interfere with one another. But if you do, for God's sakes, don't try to change it. Now, that has had no effect on her in the last 17 years. But it's had no effect on me either. What you see is what you get. How many times have we promised women something we could never give them? Maybe a home in the hills or some great and wonderful thing, and we had not even enough money to buy them a cup of coffee when the meeting was over. And we had to be opaque and conceal ourselves from others. You know, I heard a song once that says that better, I guess, than anything else, called Rose Garden. And I used to play that over and over and over for Bev because there's one thing in it I really like, one phrase that is extremely important. It says, if that's what it takes to hold you, I'd just as soon let you go. I'd just as soon let you go. What you see is what you get. And if I am living my life wide open as AA has told me to do by telling all of my story to someone, every bit of it, what have I got to conceal? If God knows and He knows and I know, what the hell's the secret now? What you see is what you get. And it has worked extremely well. The next one is apartness. I learned this from Gabron and Al-Anon. Al-Anon says, I want to release you with love. I'm just not going to let you close enough to hit me anymore. Gabron said, let there be an apartness in our togetherness. Let us support equally this weight of life, each of us strong in our own ways. Apartness. How many times have we had to get away from someone because they held on so tight we couldn't breathe? Someone we really liked. How many times have we got away from our parents or our children had to get away from us because they were telling us or we were telling them, I know what's best for you. You ain't going to be this, you're going to be that. We held on so tight they could not grow spiritually. If you're ever in California, go up into the redwoods, up on the coast especially, and you'll see that some of these trees grow, 400 or 500 feet high. There's one up in the mountains there in Yosemite, or Sequoia, I guess it is, that was, 1,500 years old when Christ was born. Those trees seemingly live forever, and yet underneath very little growth. The sunlight of the Spirit can't come through, and there is no growth. No underbrush, very little. You cannot grow spiritually in the shadow of your lover, your wife, your husband, your friends. You cannot grow spiritually except in the light of God. You can't grow spiritually in the shadow of your sponsor, for Christ's sake. Not even there. You might ask yourself, well, then what good is a sponsor? A sponsor is someone who is still sick enough to listen to you and keep you here till a miracle happens. That's what a sponsor is. Sponsor can do no miracle. You grow spiritually only in the light of God. Freedom. I never associated freedom with love. Never. I mean, to me, a kiss was a contract. I didn't know what freedom was. I thought freedom was doing what you want to do when you want to do it. And then I made an important discovery from a song I heard that said that kind of freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Freedom is not doing what you want to do when you want to do it. Freedom is the power to do what you have to do when it needs to be done. And now you are free from the bondage of self, perhaps for the first time in your life. And that is the only bondage any alcoholic was ever under anyway, the bondage of self. And you are free because freedom is the awesome power to do what you have to do when it needs to be done. Now you go to work, pay your bills, fill your car up full of gas and the other things that are necessary in life. Now seems to have straightened out. And yet there's one more quality. One quality that I am convinced, as others before me have been, that if you had all of the alcoholics in the world in one room, you'd have less than 2% of the world's patience. You know what patience is? You know how important it is? tape. Right after Bev and I first got married, there was one of her, well, she calls them babies. I got another word for them. Anyway, she called up this one day and she said, "Is Beverly there?" I said, "No, she's not here right now." She said, "Oh my God, I got to talk to somebody, even if it's you." Now, she's still alive. That's because I have patience. Patience. Without patience, how could you possibly, as a sponsor, sit there for 3 and 4 years and listen to this poor moronic idiot run off at the mouth? How could you possibly have him go to some strange meeting somewhere and come back and tell you about this great and wonderful person he heard talk and repeat to you exactly what you have been telling him for the last 6 or 8 months? It's good. Without patience, you would have no choice. Without patience, we would interfere in the lives of others. I have a youngest daughter who still believes in better living through chemistry. Without patience, I would tell her how to stay sober and how to get away from these drugs and how to live and how to control her life and what to do with her children and everything else. And I would drive a wedge between she and I and between you and her. And she would have no place to go. And I have said nothing. With God's help, I will say nothing. Patience is the power. Power, once again, to do nothing when there is nothing you can do. An awesome, tremendous power. 3 of the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous deal with power, don't they? 3 of them deal with it. The first, the second, and the 11th. And God at the same time. You cannot develop patience. God gives it to you when you are worthy. And a lot of people say, "Oh, I have a lot of trouble with step 10. Do you? Why do you have so much trouble with step 10? You really realize what step 10 is telling you? It says, go somewhere and tell them you were wrong about yesterday. Can't be wrong about tomorrow. It ain't here. Isn't that just a way of saying I'm wiser today than I was yesterday? I know more today than I did yesterday. What seems so right now shows it's wrong, and I am sorry for what I have said or done. And if they ridicule you, what difference does it make? You are wiser now than you were yesterday, and that is the only thing you can hope for from step 10, and that's what it gives you. What about step 11? That's when you get the job God that you applied for in step 3. God gives it to you now. You will now be praying only for the knowledge of God's will for you and the power to carry that out, and you will get it. Whatever it is He wants you to do, you'll have the power to do. You won't have any more emotional strength than you had 25 years ago. I don't. Spiritual strength. I hear a lot of people talking about growth today. They're going to grow. They're going to ask a doctor. Ask Paul, for God's sake. The prime purpose of a cancer cell is growth. Willing to grow along spiritual lines. Spiritual lines. Love. Fear. It's time for me to get off here. And so, going, I want to tell you about step 12. Remember what I said a while ago? If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, you know what it is? That's it. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And I don't want to hear of any one of you going into a restaurant now and treating a waitress like she was dirt. You are the publicity agents for Alcoholics Anonymous. Did you know that? And because it's a program of attraction, you must now treat your fellow man as you would expect the treatment from him. Whether he gives it to you or not, it's not important. You will not lose your life because you're struggling for 18 feet of real estate in a car you can only own for a second. To practice these principles in all your affairs, kindness, courtesy, and consideration. What is so hard about that? You are the front of Alcoholics Anonymous. And how many times have we given our whole organization a black eye because of the stupidity of some few of our members who treat everyone like they were dirt? When God had a message He wanted carried on the face of this earth, He looked around to see who could carry it for Him better than anyone else. And He found a group of people over in the Middle East who were the most stiff-necked, self-willed people He could find at that time. And He gave them the commandment of carrying the message of one God throughout the world. It was a tribe of Israel. And in spite of all the shame, humiliation, and degradation that have been heaped upon their shoulders over these many centuries, they have carried that message so well that there are only two fundamental religions in the world today who do not fully subscribe to the one God theory. And they are changing. I won't live to see it, but they'll come around. You mark my words. They'll come around. One God. And before any of you say, oh, it's God as we understand, I want to point something out to you. Please don't say it to me, because all you're saying is I read chapter 11 where it says united under one God. Many ways to worship. Many ways to get out of it if you want to. But one God. One God. When Christ was born, I knew he was born to carry a spiritual message. I also knew the Ten Commandments were physical laws. When you take a moral inventory, what you're going to do is find out how you violated the Ten Commandments. You think you're going to do any more, you're kidding yourself. I told you about three of them, a liar, a cheat, and a thief. Thou shalt not bear false witness. And you will find out how you have violated these Ten Commandments. And that's enough to get you off the hook, but it's not enough to give you a job yet. I knew Christ was born to carry a spiritual message, but for heaven's sakes, I couldn't find it. I looked and looked and looked, and it was never there. So I patterned my life after the golden rule, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, for as you do unto them, so it will be done unto you. And it worked extremely well. And it is common to every religious tenet I've ever read. Every one of them has that in there in some way, in some form. It's there. Christianity, Buddhism, all of them. It's all there. And then I made a mistake. I got into an argument with a woman. I know better than to argue with women. Even when you win, you lose, but I did it. I do it anyway. It was about the Bible, and I was going to look something up and show her what it was. Prove to her it was in there. And I found that spiritual commandment. When Christ was asked what is the greatest of all the commandments, he said there are two. To love your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. And he had given us the spiritual commandment of love. For he said, therein is all of the prophets and the law. That's the whole damn thing. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. And for the first 300 years after his death, this message was carried extremely well by today what's known as the first century Christians. Who are the basis, really, of the Oxford groups? Which is the basis, really, of Alcoholics Anonymous, as we know it today? To love your neighbor as you love yourself. To help those who can't help themselves, to learn to help themselves. Don't food for them what they will not do, but help them what they cannot do. And it worked extremely well for about 300 years. And then Constantine became emperor of Rome. And he sanctioned a church, and he got himself a blue flag and painted a white cross on it and put a little Latin expression on it, said, hoc signo vinces. And this sign, thou shalt conquer, and went off on a holy war. And the churches were formed, and cash flow became important, and the message became dormant. For 1,600 years, that message just lay there. Nobody doing much about it. Some did occasionally, but not many. And once again, God had a message he wanted carried. And once again, he looked around this earth to see who could carry this message of love for him better than anyone else. And one more time, he found a group of people who were the most stiff-necked, hard-headed, self-willed, egocentric, bull-headed bunch of people he could find any place in the world called alcoholics. And this time, in a blinding flash of light, he made a deal with one of them. He said, Bill, I'll make a deal with you. If you'll carry the message of love throughout the world, you will never drink again. And for 52 years, Alcoholics Anonymous has carried this message of love one drunk to another so well that we have risen from 2 to almost 2 million sober people in this world today. And you will carry that message in a world full of hate, and it will take every bit of the determination that you have mustered over these years to do it. God has put you through the fire, the furnace of affliction, and chosen you to carry his message of love. You will carry it, or you will drink. It's that simple. And how many times have you heard someone say what I'm going to say right now? You loved me when I could not love myself. You have taught me how to love you. And for that, I am extremely grateful. Thank you all very much.